Be on Commerce to order. We've got a couple of housekeeping matters we need to take care of before we get started. First of all, some announcements. There was a posting that we were scheduled to be meeting this next Monday, which is February 5th. I want to call to the attention of committee members and of the general public that that day has been canceled because of other obligations that have come up. So we will not be meeting on Monday, February 5th. Friday, February 9th, was scheduled to be a travel day for the committee. We were going to be outside of Salem for hearings. Unfortunately, the bill that we want to use for that hearing is not ready from the Legislative Council. Because of that, we are not going to be using Friday, February 5th, as a travel day. So members, again, please make certain that your calendars reflect that you do not need to be concerned about traveling for the committee. With that said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask, I guess for formalities, I probably need to open a informational update because it's not posted.
You could just come in at the public hearing, please.
Okay, what we're going to do is open up a public hearing. This is a public hearing is being opened up on Senate Bill 388. Senate Bill 389 and Senate Bill 390. We're going to be taking public testimony on all three of them at the same time. I assume from looking at the list that we have for witnesses, some individuals have signed up for more than one of those bills. What that means is that you can go ahead and give your testimony on each and every one of those bills that you want to when you come up. I try to run a system that we can get people in and out. What our committee will do is we'll have a panel before us of two or three people at the dais. And we will take the testimony, then we'll go into questions so we can make certain that everyone understands what's being said before breaking in, because it's going to be one of those situations that I expect that there might be some repetitiveness. For those who are testifying after our panel has testified, if you realize that what you are going to testify to is similar or the same as what someone else has testified to, I ask you to be brief in your testimony as to maybe just affirming the testimony that you already heard, because we don't need to hear the testimony, the same testimony, two, three, or four, or five times. But we do want to know what you think, and your approval to that testimony will be just as important to hear. That sound reminds me of another little announcement I need to make. If you have a cell phone or some other type of electronic device that you use for communication, I need you to please turn it off completely. Do not just put it into the meetings mode or in the silent mode. The problem is that it works on electronics, just like our audio system does. And unfortunately, our system is kind of old. And because of that, we've been told that it actually will actually sometimes disrupt the audio, so when they're recording this to be played over the internet or played back later, there's distortion. So if you'll please do that, that would be wonderful. And those people who are going to be listening in the future will also appreciate not having a bunch of fuzzy noise coming over the mic system. So with that said, what I'm going to do is first ask Eva Novick from the Department of Justice to please come forward. And Ms. Novick, I understand that you're going to give us kind of a update on Senate Bill 116, which also deals with towing, and it hopefully will set the stage as to, I know at least one of the bills that we have today does in fact cover some of the areas that the bill that we've already had some hearing on.
That is correct, Chair. For the record, my name is Eva Novick. I am Assistant Attorney General in the Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section of the Oregon Department of Justice. And I am here to give the committee an update on the towing work group that was formed after the public hearing on SB 116 on January 22nd. The work group includes representatives from the legislature, the towing industry, the insurance industry, property managers and landlords, the Oregon State Police, the City of Portland, and an automobile road service organization, as well as the Oregon Department of Justice. The work group has been diligently working together to discuss towing issues raised by 116, as well as other issues related to the towing industry. We will present the chair on Monday with proposed amendments to SB 116 that incorporate consensus language. These amendments will address all issues raised in the work group, except for those dealing specifically with a landlord-tenant relationship. The work group believes that the landlord-tenant issues are best addressed through the existing landlord-tenant coalition, and Sean Miller has graciously agreed to coordinate discussions between interested parties of this work group and the existing landlord-tenant work group.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Novick?
I just want to clarify, you mentioned Monday, and we won't be meeting Monday, so it'll be another date.
Thank you for the catch.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this point, I'm going to ask Senator Gordley to please go to the dais so she can do an overall presentation of the bills that we are going into public hearing. And the other part, just to let everyone know, what I'm going to do my best to do is have a panel of those for and then against. And once we've gone through either side that runs out, then we'll continue with the other testimony of the others so we can try to have some balance. Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Avelle Gordley, representing Senate District 23 in Multnomah County. And, Mr. Chair and colleagues, I first want to thank my Chief of Staff, Sean Cruz, for all of his hard work that brought these issues forward on behalf of our constituents, and I'd like to invite him to join me as well. And I also wish to thank at this time the Department of Justice for their leadership in looking at the towing industry and towing issues, and particularly Ms. Eva Novick for her leadership of the work group, and you've just heard their progress report. And for the record, you also have, or should have in front of you, 18 pages that include the number of complaints that have been received by my office, complaints related to the issue of towing. My remarks will be brief, and then I'd like to make way for members of the public who have traveled to the Capitol to speak today. And we're very grateful that people are here to speak to this issue, be they for or against the bills that we have in front of us. All of the concepts that my office has sent to Legislative Council for drafting arise from conduct in the private property impound or PPI sector, and the practice we are addressing in that sector is referred to as patrol towing in other states. It is my belief that towers, on the whole, provide superb service along our roads and highways and in service to the transportation industry in general. However, in an industry largely unregulated and that has failed to regulate itself, some players, some in the private property impound sector of the towing industry, have developed a niche market in vehicle harvesting that is unrelated to the lawful, legitimate services that towing companies provide to Oregonians throughout the state in the normal transaction of business. This type of towing, private property impounds, or patrol towing, is illegal in many other states, including our neighbors, Washington and California. These practices may be accurately described as predatory. This sector of the towing industry relies on drivers who are paid on a commission basis to make on-the-spot decisions regarding towing. Providing assistance to stranded motorists is not the job of the person involved in a tow. They have routes or sectors to patrol, and their pay depends entirely on finding someone's vehicle to hook and to do so quickly. And I understand that one of the safety issues related to patrol towing occurs when drivers in a hurry to get away with a vehicle fail to attach the required safety equipment. This is the subject that has come out in some of the complaints, some of the stories that we have received in my office. The tow companies working the patrol towing sector market their services to property owners for free, so the business model itself appears to depend entirely on the number of vehicles that can be harvested. The patrol driver's job essentially is to grab anything that can be construed as harvestable, get it to the lot, and then go out and get another one. Sorting out all of the problems isn't the driver's job. It's to go get another problem and then move it to the lot. I want to offer clarification at this time regarding Senate Bill 388. It was my intent that this legislation require tow truck drivers to provide printed rate sheets to vehicle owners when the vehicle owner is present on the scene. This printed information should identify the basis for the charges that the tow truck driver demands from the vehicle owner. The way the bill was printed, Senate Bill 388 would require towing companies to paint their rates on the outside of the vehicle. And for the record, this was not the intent, and that intent, that printed rate sheets would be provided to citizens, is captured in Senate Bill 116. So as a legislative vehicle, it appears that Senate Bill 388 is unnecessary. As you hear the stories of the citizens appearing today, and as you read the complaints in the 18 pages before you, and that we're entering into the record today, several themes will emerge. And I want to say also that all of the complaints that my office has received from citizens regarding wrongful towing have been forwarded directly to the Department of Justice for investigation and possible action. You will hear that these Oregon citizens were greatly and unreasonably inconvenienced by both the towing event and the instances that by what followed. That the burden of resolving issues and errors falls entirely and unfairly on the citizen. That some citizens and or the citizen's family felt a threat of harm from the encounter or of being stranded in an unsafe area or at an unsafe time of day. That in many cases, the vehicle is legally and lawfully parked at the owner's own residence but towed away anyway. That the drivers demand cash in amounts larger than most people normally carry or have available without notice. We are aware that many of these predatory practices occur in apartment complexes that provide housing for low-income residents. That the demands were always made verbally with no printed price or rate sheet provided to the citizen. And that often these practices result in actual confiscation of the vehicle. And to conclude, you will learn that these practices, or appreciate that these practices, cost all Oregon taxpayers in the burdens they place on police agencies and on the small claims court system. Some of the people here today may tell you that this is the first time someone is listening to them. They've had to deal with the tow truck driver and the situation that they faced, towing company managers, property managers, the police, the small claims process, and now they are here today. And again, I'd like to thank those people who are behind me and prepared to testify. And Mr. Chair, I'm prepared for your questions or comments from the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Gordley at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So what we're going to do, as I mentioned, we're going to go ahead and call up panels. So what I've done is gone through the three lists. I will make a call at the end to make certain anyone else who didn't get on the list has an opportunity to testify. And I just want to get one clarification. Angela and Randall Sherwood, did both of you want to testify or just one? Both? Okay. I just want to make sure I got the numbers right. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to go based on the signing on the list, first come, first serve is the way I try to do it. I believe it's John. Is it Weingant?
Weingant,
Mr. Gant, and then Julie Tran and Brent Peterson. If you three...
we're together, so I'll just do it.
I didn't understand.
Okay, that's fine. So, Brent, why don't you come on up, and then Sybil Heeb, excuse me. Can you read my own writing? And when you're ready, if all I need you to do for those who have not given testimony before, state your name before you give your testimony so it'll be part of the record.
My name is John Weigant. I live in Gresham. I'm a towing victim. I've worked with the City of Portland on their towing legislation, their ordinance, and that also is deeply flawed. I'm here on short notice without time to investigate the details of this and how it relates to Senate Bill 116, but my goal was that all these issues should be folded in together. The towing system is fundamentally dishonest and without accountability. It is dishonest because it permits legalized theft and ransom, extortion, without a hearing and with no effective appeal. The system is unaccountable because the initiating actor in this transaction is typically not accountable at all. There are normally three actors in a towing transaction: a lot owner or a space owner, the towing company, and the car owner. The lot owner starts the process with a call, except in those cases where the lot owner has delegated this to the towing company itself to do trolling for vehicles. The tow company does incur expense, but it incurs no responsibility. They simply want to be paid. The car owner has their car held for ransom under the law. The car owner says, my car should not have been towed. The tow company says, not my problem. And until the accountability of the requester, of the lot owner, is assigned, the system must necessarily remain dishonest. The costs are excessive, which is usual in situations of extortion. Tow companies do claim high costs, at least they did under the Portland ordinance, but they also have high income, and none of these towing companies was willing to provide a profit and loss sheet to show whether or not their income was proportional to their costs. In terms of the specifics of Senate Bill 390, it should relate to any motor vehicle, or to any vehicle. In my particular case, I had a boat trailer towed, and so that wouldn't be covered. Tow companies claim they are doing a service to lot owners. Usually those who receive a service pay for the service, not here. All the costs are assigned to the vehicle owner, nor do purchasers negotiate the price. Their attitude is, I don't care what you charge because I don't pay. In summary, towing legislation can only be honest and market-driven until the buyers of the service, the lot owners, are parties to the contract and should have some of the responsibilities for errors, which they do not now have, and errors do occur. Owners should never be allowed to delegate a towing decision to a tow company. This should be made specifically on the site by the towing company. A year ago, and these fees are not constant. A year ago, I slid on ice and damaged my front end and had my called a tow company. The rates they were charging me for a private tow to the garage were less than half of what the city of Portland's rates were for a trolled vehicle. The Landlord-Tenant Coalition, as testified by Eva Novick, is not sufficient to deal with this issue, particularly in terms of tenant and landlords, because typically there is no recourse under the law. Somebody who's been illegally towed or improperly towed has no way, customary way, to find out their rights under the law if this has been assigned to a landlord-tenant coalition. Citizens need to have the ability to determine what their rights under the law are, and right now they don't have any.
Thank you. Sybil?
Thank you, Chair Pozanski and members of the committee. Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center. Can you hear me okay? Thank you. The Oregon Law Center, as many of you know, is a statewide provider of civil legal assistance to low-income Oregonians. And so very close to our mission is the job of protecting the dignities and the rights of low-income people. This issue related to predatory towing is, of course, an issue that impacts everybody, regardless of income, but it has a particularly negative impact on people who have low incomes. Already living close to the edge, families are sometimes thrust into huge negative consequences down the line by the loss of a vehicle, especially if it's an unexpected loss. Often there are job sanctions. Often single parents are unable to juggle both attending work and picking up childcare when they're subject to the schedules and regulations of public transportation. So when vehicles are towed by predatory towing practices, essentially search and tow operations, our clients suffer particularly negative consequences, which is why we're interested in this issue. We have heard horror stories from our clients about predatory towing practices. To be honest, the stories that we have heard have been mostly about the practices that have been affected by the towing companies and have not focused as much on any kind of landlord responsibilities. That doesn't mean that doesn't happen, but we are the stories that we have heard have been largely about towing practices. And the reason I'm here today is because I think that this committee's attention to this issue in a wraparound way is essentially very important, and I encourage the committee to consider the issues of fees that are charged, hours of operation, and whether or not fees can be continued to be charged when offices are not open to receive payment and to return vehicles. I also encourage the committee to look at what the towing companies do with respect to property that's left in the car. We had one story in which a client's dog was in the car when it was towed, and they refused to give the dog back until she could come up with the money, which of course causes extra emotional distress, and not to mention other damage. And so that was a problem. I also encourage the committee to look at notices of fees, as you've discussed, and notices of intent to tow. And I agree that methods of payment are an important aspect in terms of the accessibility of retrieving the vehicle. I also encourage the committee to look at damages that are provided to people who are impacted by the use of unscrupulous practices. In our experience, we have felt that that has been a disincentive to the use of bad practices, and it serves as some form of compensation for people who suffer inappropriately from unscrupulous practices. So I appreciate that. I also would like to say that I have been a participating member of the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, which a number of people have referred to. I am not a landlord-tenant expert by any means, although I hope to get there one day. But I do think that that is a good forum for discussion about amendments to the Landlord-Tenant Act. There are experts who represent landlords as well as the interests of tenants at that committee. It has a very chock-full agenda every session, and particularly this session, but I do think that's a good forum for discussion of the issue as it relates to landlords. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson.
Hi, my name is Brent Peterson. I'm the gentleman that's on the front page of the Oregonian that they did the article about today. I got flack for the shirt, but... I've been disabled for about 10 years. I'm an amputee below the knee. I've had a handicap pass for the last 10 years. I lived in the same residence with my girlfriend for 10 months. There is one handicap parking spot there. I've always parked in that. I've always had my pass there. Never been an issue. I came home 2 days before Thanksgiving. I worked kind of a swing night shift, 5 in the morning, to find the car gone. I came home, woke her up rudely, and says, "Where in the world is the car?" So we call 911, assuming that the car was stolen. They told us that it had been impounded. We get on the phone to Safeguard Towing. They said that they had impounded our car because the handicap tag was not visible. Got a ride down there. We asked them if we could see the car. They said when we got there, you guys would be able to look at it. When we got there, they wouldn't let us see the car. They informed me that they were hired by our apartment complex to patrol our area. And I asked them, "Well, if you patrolled our area, you've seen my car parked here in this spot, day in and day out." "Yes, we have, but our drivers work on commission. We saw the opportunity to make money, so that's why we impounded your car." And at that point, I didn't handle that very well, and the conversation kind of went sideways.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, and I thought it was like a Believe It or Not or Ripley, like, you know, people messing with me, like a boiling point show. I couldn't believe that that's what their attitude was. They went on to perceive me that all businesses' jobs are to make money, and why wouldn't they make it if they had the opportunity to? It started out at $385. It went to $285. And then at the end of the night, it was down to $195. It was like, "Let's make a deal." We paid them the $195 with help of our apartment manager in the hopes that supposedly we were supposed to have a meeting with the owner and the people that were involved in it 2 days following that to maybe work this out so we could get our money back. Once they got the $195, We never heard from them again. We called them 15, 20, 30 times. The owners of our apartment complex called them. Either the guy doesn't know how to read or he doesn't have a phone, because he never called us back and just up and vanished. Only by sheer luck did this person contact, the actual owner contacted our apartment manager and asked how things were going around Christmas time. And she says, you know, terrible. We're looking for a new someone to represent us. You guys, we don't want you here anymore. Once he found out about it, immediately a check was cut for us right there. So it took 30 days, almost 40 days, and all that grief, because they saw an opportunity to make money. They know I have a pass, and they took our car.
All right. Committee members, any questions for anyone on the panel here? I do have one question, Mr. Peterson. Was the placard available in the car?
Yes. My personal opinion is I don't keep it up in my window, because it says do not drive with this up there. That's what it says. By putting it in the seat or putting it in the door, that would allow me to forget it. So it's always up on the dashboard. So if you walk by, you could see that. These guys are in such a hurry because they don't know where the people are coming from. I believe that it was up there the whole time, and that it was foggy and your windows were condensation. The guy probably went up, glanced at it real quick, didn't see it, took the car, hauled it away. When I talked to him on the phone, the guy's like, well, we didn't see it hanging from the mirror. And I'm like, well, you're not going to see it hanging from the mirror. You're going to see it up along by the VIN number where it always is. When I get there, they wouldn't let me see it, but it got put into the supposedly in the door, which the guy said he looked through the window with a flashlight and saw it sitting in the door.
Oh.
So he saw it either way. He
had knowledge.
He acknowledged
basically. Any other questions for anyone on the panel?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just like to thank Mr. Peterson for taking time out of your day to come and participate in the people's process.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Thank you all. All right, our next panel is going to be, I'm not sure, Gary Cole and Al Elkin on the same line. I don't know if both of you want to come up or just one of you. So both of you are coming up. Okay, and then also Jay Norton Cabell, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commerce Committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Tow Truck Association. I wanted to speak to Senate Bill 388, Mr. Chair, and
okay.
Since Senator Gordley has said that that bill is not, the intent of that bill is now in 116, I don't need to say what I was going to say about that.
So. Well, why don't you go ahead and put it on the record, because since we've opened this up and we have other people here, what we'll do is we'll take that testimony, the testimony today, and have it included with Senate Bill 116 as supplemental.
Okay. The Senate Bill 388 as written would require us to post on the outside of the tow trucks.
Okay.
And the only visible place that would be on the doors. And there just doesn't seem to be enough room. We're required by a lot of cities and counties to have the names of the company, phone numbers, and in some case, numbers for contract purposes. And we, in the work group in 116, we have talked about using rates as handouts and giving the rates as opposed to putting them on the trucks.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to speak to this. And I appreciate Mr. Cruz calling me earlier in the week and telling me of the error in the drafting of the bill. But I just wanted to have it on record that we would be opposed to having those rates listed on the doors.
I appreciate your
thank
your
you.
Comments.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up.
You may.
So, Mr. Elkins, just to make sure that I understand and we understand for the record, would you then be supporting having printed rate sheets and having printed rate sheets available?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Brzezinski, Senator Gordley, yes, we are working with the work group, and we have talked about the concept, and I think it's in written form now in the amendment to the bill for a rate sheet to be distributed to the customer, and we're supportive of that. Yes.
Presented to the customer, if I may follow up.
Yes.
Presented to the customer at the time of the tow?
or a possible 12?
Yes, Senator Gourley, yes, if the person is present at the toe, obviously yes, that would be at the time. I believe that's what the wording says in the amendment. I'd have to check with Eva, but I believe that's what the latest draft says.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins, and also thank you very much for your participation in the work group.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gourley, I just wanted to thank. I don't want Sean's hand to get too big, but he's been very helpful in keeping us informed of what's going to happen and some of the topics that we've discussed in the work group, and we certainly do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole.
Thank you, Chairman Brzezinski and members of the Senate Commerce Committee. My name is Gary Coe, and I'm the owner of Retriever Towing in Portland. We started Retriever Towing in 1975 to serve the Portland police, local business owners, and property management companies who all dealt with parking problems and parking violators. By the way, I'd like to say that we accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and back when the banks issued check guarantee cards, we accepted checks along with the check guarantee card. I understand that dozens of people have been invited here today to share their horror stories, and I ask you to remember that there is, in fact, another side to every story. I've submitted a copy of the Portland police contract tow tallies for 2006. I think you'll see in the handout. In it, you'll note that there was about 37,000 tows requested, and about 27,000 of those were penalties due to a driver or vehicle owner violating a law on a city street. There are also people who violate laws on private property. They park in fire lanes, handicap spaces, parking spaces assigned to someone else. They block dumpsters, loading zones, and leave their for sale cars on empty lots and store parking lots. In every case, there is a multitude of signs posted which clearly state the prohibition or the restriction on parking. Typical signs might include the words tenant parking only, customer parking only, permit parking only, and various other, whatever the restriction is. And the signs are posted at the entrance and various other places on the property, and they are more than double the size of the city's own parking restriction signs. Senate Bill 390 proposes a required 24-hour notice on a vehicle before it can be removed. That means that a driver who goes to the Blazer game can park in the motel parking lot across the street to avoid paying the Rose Gardens parking fee, is allowed to do so because he'll move it before 24 hours have elapsed. In Steve Dean's column a few weeks ago, there was the consumer who couldn't find a place to park in Northwest Portland, so she pulled into a convenience store parking lot, buys a couple bottles of Snapple, puts it in her car, then walks down the street to do the shopping that she intended to do in the first place. We have no problem placing a 24-hour notice on abandoned vehicles, unlicensed vehicles, and vehicles not impeding the appropriate use of private property. However, passing a bill that requires 24-hour written notice on every vehicle before it's towed would create open season for drivers to steal the use of someone else's space, which might even be your driveway. In addition, we already go through the fruitless exercise of posting many vehicles with notices, only to return 24 hours later and find that the notice has been removed. The specific Oregonian article this morning addressed one such issue, and we have the photos of the sticker on the car. We replace an average of 12 signs a week that have been torn down by the owner of the vehicle so that they can claim that there was no sign. We take photos at the time of the tow so that we know exactly where the car was and in relationship to the sign or the fire zone painted curb. I've included a couple more attachments that I wanted to point out. One has to do with
May I inquire, before you go further, I want to make sure I understood something that you just said. You take photos at the time of...
Every tow? Yes.
And the photo is taken...
Photo is taken of the vehicle and of the vehicle in conjunction, in relationship to the no parking sign.
Okay.
This next document in the handout shows that this is from the Better Business Bureau's files off of the internet this morning. Showed that our company had 35 complaints in 36 months. Certainly we deal with more complaints than that, but 35 of them went to the Better Business Bureau. We try to get them resolved before they ever go there. But there's some other prominent companies that you can see end up with a lot more complaints than us. And I'm making a point here because the next document is from our Attorney General's office, where and this is almost a year old, so I guess it's time for a new one, the top 10 consumer complaint list. And towing is not on the top 10. We have financial institutions. We have medical, physicians and dentists, contractors, Nigerian money schemes, but there's nothing about towing here. I have to ask, how far down the list is towing, and have you created an issue that is a very, very small issue? Now, I realize that you have to deal with, in any hearing situation, a lot of conflicting information. So I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And let's see, I apologize. I just... Mr.
Cabell. My name is Cabell. My name is Morton Cabell, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I live in Eugene. I own and manage some rental property in Eugene and Springfield. I'm also also here as legislative director for Oregon Rental Housing Association, which is a statewide landlord trade group with about 4,000 members statewide, about 1,500 of whom are in Portland. And I was asked moments ago also to speak on behalf of Metro Multifamily Housing Association, of which I'm a member, which is Portland-based. They have, although only about 400 members, they represent around 250,000 rental units around the state. I'm asking you to vote against Senate Bills 389 and 390. These bills will do nothing to help apartment residents whose cars are improperly towed. 389 requires landlords with parking lots to provide a notice to tenants of the towing company's name, address, and towing charges. Such a disclosure made at the beginning of the tenancy will join a host of other papers landlords already have to give tenants. My move-in process involves about 10 pieces of paper, and it wouldn't be much bother to add one more to it. But I know that when the tenant wants some information off one of those pieces of paper, they usually call me up and ask me for a copy because they're long since gone. Landlords already have to post the contact information prominently on signs before somebody's car can be towed so that the tenant does know who to contact to retrieve their vehicle. And I read the article today in the Oregonian as well, as I don't think the disclosure required under this bill would have helped any of those individuals. Senate Bill 390 would require a landlord to give a tenant 24 hours notice before the tenant's car is towed. Mr. Coe is very correct that this will be a headache, create headaches for responsible tenants and be a license to irresponsible ones. It would enable a tenant coming home in the evening to park in someone else's spot, in a loading zone, a fire lane, a handicapped spot, and only after somebody notices it and complains to the site manager and the manager calls them, that does that start a 24-hour clock to move the vehicle. Landlords, I will remind you, are in the business of renting property, not towing vehicles. Most property managers are very reluctant. I'm one of them, very reluctant to tow a vehicle. They want happy tenants, not aggravated ones. Yet they also want parking lot spaces available for their tenants. So they tow when they have to, but really only when they have to. Property managers who have vehicles towed are not the problem as I see it. Predatory towers are the problem. And I, too, support and those organizations I just spoke of. We support Senate Bill 116, which we think is a more reasoned approach to the problem. I also am a member of that landlord-tenant coalition that's been referred to several times, and certainly with some reluctance, I'm willing to have that coalition consider the issue. As it pertains to landlords, I think that's an appropriate a vehicle for that, but I don't think these bills are, and I'm happy to answer questions for any of you.
Thank you. I'm going to open up for questions. The chair has a couple, but I'll see if anyone else does.
I have a couple.
All right. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much for Mr. Coe. And again, thank you very much for being here this afternoon. I just want to establish for the record, are you also a participating member of the Department of Justice work group?
I was at two of them. I was out of town on Thursday and Monday's sessions.
Okay. Is it your intent to continue with the
yes.
Department of Justice?
Yes, it is.
We would hope so. And I believe it was your testimony that the issue of towing or predatory towing did not make the Attorney General's top 10.
That, according to his report, that is true.
But you would acknowledge that the Attorney General has formed the work group to look at the issue of towing, given the number of complaints that have been received by the Department of Justice.
We have specifically asked about the number of complaints and do not have an answer as to how many there actually are.
I believe we will be able to establish in testimony with Ms. Novick, perhaps, what the number of complaints, what that number is currently. And then, Mr. Chair, I don't know what the exact count is in the 18 pages that we've sent to the Department of Justice, but we also consider those to be complaints as well. Again, just to establish that there is an issue here. That's it. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Colby, I have a couple of things. I guess one clarification. In your testimony, you talked about someone wanting to go, like, to the Blazer game and parking in a different lot. I think you were referring to Senate Bill 390. I believe the other testimony we heard made it clear. My reading of that, it's limited to landlord-tenant situations where the 24-hour notice, as it's written in the bill, would be for a resident to receive that from the landlord as compared to a private business. So just clarification, make sure. And I know this is something that will be worked on through the work group to flesh that out, make sure it's very clear if something like that's going to continue. I do have a question, though, Mr. Cole, based on what we heard in the first panel, as to an explanation, if you can give it, as to why there is a different rate that is charged to individuals when they have a private tow as compared to someone that's being towed through one of these other processes. And understanding from what the testimony was before, in some cases it may be over double or at least double. And what's the justification for those type of expenses that are being claimed by a tow operator as compared to if an individual stranded on the side of the road and you were to provide service at a different rate?
There are a number of reasons, and thank you for asking that.
You bet.
I think it's important to get that out. On a repair tow, excuse me, on a breakdown tow or an accident tow, there are virtually no dry runs. You get requested for a tow, you arrive at the scene, you pick up the car, you tow it from point A to point B, and you get paid or you get a purchase order, and that is it. The transaction is done. On impound towing, almost everybody who parks illegally has one eye on what they're doing and one eye on their car. So a lot of businesses call us for tows only to have the car moved by the time we get there. So we end up with a whole host of dry runs.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we have several hundred complexes that ask us to, that we've contracted with us to patrol specifically for fire lanes, but other issues also. But fire lanes are a big issue to make sure that fire trucks can get in and out of a facility. And of course, it costs us overhead to do those patrols several times an evening or several times a day or night, whatever they ask us to do. It's generally evenings and nights because they are there. Property management people are on site during the day and can glance out and check that. In addition, the third reason is that of the vehicles we tow, we only get paid for about 85% of them. The rest of them are junk vehicles, and we have to go through an extensive possessory lien process and sell them at auction. And they will rarely bring the tow bill and storage bill. We process them in the shortest possible time, usually 30 days for undervalued cars. And towing and storage bill comes to somewhere around $800, $700 by that point. And our average is about $300 per car. And we're fortunate because we have a live auction. Most of the towers sell them to wrecking yards and average a little over $100 per car. So if you can't get paid for the service, that's why the overall cost is more to provide that kind of service.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cole. I do have a follow-up, though. You said in your testimony that some of the tolling that your company does includes tow-outs that are requested by the police.
Yes, that's correct.
About 15. My understanding, that would not be a dry run. That would be one that would be, let's say, a live one that you're going to be able to get to. So what rate applies to a police tow as compared to a patrolling tow with a company, with a landlord or a business?
The patrol tow, the police tows are under the vast majority of them are under police contract. All of them that we do are under the Portland police contract. And that's a specified rate that is different than our private impound rate. And no, we don't have the dry runs. And we don't have the patrol expense, and we don't have the signage expense. So there's a number of reasons why we can perform the police tows for less money than we can the private impound tows.
Okay, so if I understand from your testimony, basically you have at least three different tow rates. One that's for a private tow, someone stranded on the side of the road, which you know someone's going to be there because they've called for that service. Two, if a police officer calls for a tow impound, that would be a different rate. And then the third rate, at least level, would be for these patrolling for businesses or for landlords of some type of apartment complex?
That is correct by theory. Our company is an all-impound company, and we don't do the side-of-the-road repairs, but certainly the industry does. The vast majority of what the industry does is disable cars from point A to point B.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. Our next panel is going to include, I believe it is Greg Hopkins and Angela and Randall Sherwood.
I was promised a glass of water. A cup of water?
Yeah, we can take care of that. And we're going to have one other person join you, Mr. Sherwood. And let's see. Let's start off with Mr. Hopkins, and we'll get the water to you so you can wet your whistle before you have to talk.
My name is Greg Hopkins. I provided some details on the situation that I had with my car. My car was towed. The tow was 100% legal. There was nothing that I could do to address the situation in small claims court with any satisfaction. My complaint in this situation, my car was legally parked in my carport where I live, and I got up one morning and it was gone. And after some research, I found that the car had been towed because the license tags had expired. Retriever Towing had a picture of the vehicle a few days earlier that was proof that they had visited the car and put a tag on it. However, I never found one. So my position on that would be refuted in court because they had a digital picture. I simply don't know what happened to the warning tag. So the long and short of it is that I entered into a dispute not with Retriever Towing because they operated 100% within the boundaries of the contract that authorized them to make the tow. My dispute was with Guardian Management. And my contention is that they absolutely were not controlling the terms and conditions in a contract with one of their subcontractors. They apparently just checked boxes and let it go. The contract is totally modifiable and can be amended by a property owner. They can put in terms and conditions, and they can control at what point should a vehicle be towed, who should notify the tenant, et cetera. But they had basically just abdicated that entire role to the towing company, and they had authorized them to patrol the grounds at night as a tenant. I had no idea that Retriever Towing was running around my apartment complex at 1 in the morning looking for cars. The signs posted that have been referred to said unauthorized vehicles will be towed or impounded. Nowhere does it say on the signs this includes cars otherwise legally parked with expired tags. So I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that. It was legal because in my tenant agreement that I signed, it said vehicles will be legally licensed. So there was a sentence in there that I signed, and that was signing off on that whole situation. So I think in this situation that it's very poor contracting, very poor negotiation. I don't think that there's any request for proposals and competitive bidding to give a preferred status to any contractor. And I think it's extremely poor communication and relationship building on the part of the property owners to be on top of this with an email list or a way of some redundant type communication. So that's what resulted in this. To Retriever's credit, they did refund 50% of the towing bill, and to Guardian's credit, they did verbally agree that the contract should be amended and the checkbox on illegally licensed cars, they would remove that. They also, because if you've noticed on the contract, it's an online form and it's just radio buttons that you check. So you just click on a form online, and that's what the contract is. All of the terms and conditions are set up by Retriever Towing. The contract isn't initiated or negotiated or set up by the property owner at all. It's just a button you check. So they agreed that that was not fair, and we discussed and agreed, Guardian Management and myself, that towing a car should solve a problem for somebody. And in this situation, no one's problem was solved, and the only benefit that was accrued at all was Retriever Towing. So a pivot point in there is this solving anybody's problem? If the answer is no, and there's only a benefit that's accrued to the driver, somehow language should be constructed so that shouldn't be allowed.
Thank you. Mr. or Mrs. Sherwood, who wants to go first?
Well, I guess I'll go first. This is scary, so if you want to smile and nod supportively, that'd be fine. I've listened to the other people, and I just kind of have a simple little story. It was included in the vignettes. But my deal was I was driving to work one day in my old car, and it stopped running, so I pulled into a restaurant parking lot.
Mr. Sherwood, I just need you to take a moment and state your name for the record.
Gosh darn it. Randall Sherwood.
Thank you. And you're doing great.
Okay, well, there I am driving into the parking lot. And there were signs there saying unauthorized cars will be towed. So I went into the restaurant. I talked with the manager and asked if it was okay for me to leave my car there. I explained that I had a crisis at work and I just needed to scoot down there. And we had AAA.
Active membership.
So I thought it was resolved, and then when I came back later, of course, after work, it had been towed. And the business was closed by then. I called the towing company and naively kind of expected them to be apologetic. Well, we took the truck, we didn't know, and maybe chagrined, but they were just pretty much dismissive and saying, well, we've got your car, you're going to need to pay this much by this time to get it back. The next day, I think it was, we even had the owner talk to them and say that they had given us permission, and that wasn't information that influenced their decision at all. So, as I mentioned in my little story, I've had my car stolen in Portland before a couple of times, and then the process is the police call the towing company, and they pick it up, and they store it, and you pay them money. And I don't enjoy that process, but I'm okay with it because they're providing a service of some kind.
But here they just sort of took away the car thief, middleman, and took the car themselves. And I have a real problem with that. We didn't contact the Attorney General because their one defense that they kept coming back to was what we're doing is legal. It may not feel fair. We talked about ethics and morality, you know, but it's legal. It's in accordance with the law. And I would guess that that's why other people aren't, you know, calling to make it a top 10 with the Attorney General. So it can be legal but not right. And just kind of during that time, we, right before Christmas, we had our money just kind of earmarked in different directions. We had four severely disabled foster children we were buying for. And certain times in our lives, you know, a few hundred bucks would mean nothing, but it really had a big impact. And it was just so silly and so lame.
Thank you.
Her turn.
Angela?
My name is Angela Sherwood, and I just wanted to say what he said.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add to it. I didn't think it was fair or nice either.
All right. Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
Members, are there any questions for anyone on the panel?
What was the, Mr. Chair,
yes.
What was the tow fee?
$275. And when we negotiated with the company, when I say negotiate, I use that term very loosely because there was no negotiation. We called at one point in the afternoon and were told it was going to be, I think it was like $215, and then we called an hour and a half later, and it was, I told him, every time I call them, it goes up by $30. I'm scared to call them again. Let's just go get the darn car. I mean, it was just, it wasn't working out. There was no, it was ever-changing.
So, again, I felt like I'd done nothing wrong. I parked somewhere with permission. I had other options I could have followed to deal with the van if it had been a problem. But they said, you know, no problem at all. And I ended up sending a bunch of money to a bunch of people that I thought were just predatory and unreasonable.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. I have two other people that are, you bet. We have two other people that are signed up on the list that I'm going to call their names. I believe it's Jim Botwinis and then also Alec Jensen. And was there anyone else besides those two that wanted to speak? Okay, I got you. We'll do this panel, then we'll bring up the last two. And Mr. Botwinis, I'm going to let you go first, and then Mr. Jensen second.
Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Commerce Committee, my name is Jim Botwinis. I'm the owner of All About Towing, and I was here primarily for Senate Bill 388. Senator Gordley addressed that that's now being addressed in elsewhere in another Senate bill. Our concern, quite frankly, with publishing prices is our company is premised mostly on service. Impound is... We've been in business 2 years, and we've maybe done it six times in 2 years, so that's not an issue for us. Whatever happens, happens. On the service side, people call you and they ask you prices. They're shopping for prices, and they're going to know what they're going to pay before we ever show up out there. So I don't know what purpose it serves in me having to have some form in my truck that says this is what my prices are, because that customer already knows what my prices are before I get there. They're told ahead of time. That's basically why we're opposed to the Senate Bill 388.
Okay, and just for your information, I believe that's going to be worked in Senate Bill 116, and you may want to raise your concerns as to put that work group knows that maybe they want to consider distinguishing between for service tolls as compared to the other type.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have something else to add?
No, we're just, you know, like I said, we've done maybe six impounds in 2 years, and we already pretty much follow what you have established in a couple of these bills. I mean, that's the relationship we have with our business customers. Mm-hmm. It's just a very small part of our business. We're pretty much dedicated to service.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you again for coming forward and sharing your information and giving us this example of how towing your towing business is conducted. And I would just like to restate to you what I said in my testimony, that I acknowledge that towers on the whole provide superb service, and I acknowledge their role in the transportation industry in general. And our concern here today is about the predatory towing, the towing that goes afoul, awry, that creates victims, and that's one of our concerns. But we recognize that your business is about something else. Thank you.
Senator Gourley, thank you very much. It's we try real hard to provide a good service and do it fairly to the public, and that's what we think we're about.
I'm also acknowledging that you in your PR piece here say that you're all about towing, committed to friendly professional services with honesty, integrity, and trust.
Senator Gourley, that is exactly our mission.
Thank you.
And I'm assuming that comes from your previous employment.
Mr. Chair, yes, sir, it does.
For those who don't know, Mr. Botwin was trooper with the state police. Thank you for being here.
I thought I recognized that name.
There's not too many.
Welcome back.
Mr. Jensen.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alec Jensen. I'm the executive officer for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, serving Washington, portions of Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County. And I'm here to speak on Senate Bill 390, not to speak either for or against, but just to raise not even really as much a concern as a caution. And as I read the bill, I believe I'm reading that the intent relative to the 24 hours notice is people specifically parked in parking spaces, identified parking spaces, although the bill does make reference to marked and unmarked parking spaces. And the concern, if we have a concern, has to do with the fact that the fire service does not have the ability to order a tow in anything but an emergency situation. We respond, lights and sirens, fire engine, we can't access the incident, can't access the fire hydrant, then we can order a tow. But in the code enforcement arena, where we go out on a regular basis and we inspect these occupancies, multifamily occupancies, apartment buildings, is a good example. We work with the property manager to keep the fire lanes clear, to keep accesses to on-site fire hydrants clear, and we rely upon their ability to initiate a tow to ensure that access is maintained. So I just want to put in the record, I don't even know that it's really a concern, because I do think I understand the intent of the language. But if you convene a work group on this, I would ask that you keep that in mind and maybe even invite participation from somebody in the emergency services community. Be happy to answer any questions you have, and that's my testimony.
Thank you. Questions from the panel?
Good point. We do want to be mindful of unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, thank you again. Jim, good seeing you. I had two other people that raised their hands if y'all want to come on up to give testimony. And is there anyone else that wanted to give testimony today? Yeah. Since we don't have your names on the witness registry, I'm going to ask you not only to say your name, but if you'll spell your name so we can make sure we have a record of it. And you get to choose who gets to go first.
Okay. Chair Przanski, Senator Gourley, members of the committee, my name is Elaine Tan, spelled E-L-A-I-N-E. Last name is T like Tom, A, N like Nancy.
Thank you.
I live in the Portland area. I had an experience about 2 years ago in June of 2005. And this involves the Uptown Shopping Center parking of Burnside and 23rd, Northwest 23rd. At the time, I was a realtor with RE/MAX, and I had an offer to present to an agent at Hassan Realtors in the Uptown Shopping Center. I arrived early for the presentation, and the door wasn't even open. So I decided I will walk down the street to Cameo Cafe to have a cup of coffee. As I was walking away, I saw this one man standing there looking kind of sheepish. And, in fact, I commented to my client. I said, gee, I don't know what that man's doing. He looks kind of like, is he, like, eyeing the cars? And so I went into Cameo. There was a line, as usual. It took me about 10-15 minutes. When I came out, my car was gone. I thought someone stole my car. And there was the sheepish guy was still there, and there was another gentleman there with a vest, a neon vest. So I went up to him, and I said, I was like panicking. I said, I don't know what happened. I parked my car here 10 minutes ago. It's gone. And he said, your car has been towed. I said, well, why? He says, well, you walked off the property. I said, I have an appointment with a tenant in this building. Doesn't matter. So I didn't have a car. Fortunately, the realtor I was presenting the offer to came. She went with me to pick up my car, also to testify that I indeed was having a meeting at their facility. When we got there, they had my car, and we explained to them what happened. And the gentleman says, well, you know, we have to take your money. There's no way, you know, we have to. You can call the manager tomorrow, Chuck White. So I was very upset. As you can imagine, the toll was $177. I got my car back, proceeded to, you know, submit the offer and so forth. Subsequently, I have made complaints to the Better Business Bureau. I've made complaints to the Department of Justice. I have, in fact, Mr. Phil Stanford had written a column about this particular incident on July 1st, 2005. I have had communication with Retriever Towing several times. I also found out that they had a parking auditor, and it's called Northwest, I think at the time it was Northwest. Northwest Parking Auditors, something like that. And it is owned by the son of Gary Coe, Michael Coe. I think that towing companies do provide a service. However, everyone makes mistakes. And when you make an error, I feel that it's important for you to take responsibility for that error and make amends. I called Chuck White on Monday. Didn't return my call. I talked to the management of Uptown Shopping Center. They called them, and they said that, oh, he said he will call you. Nobody ever called me. I waited, and I called, left messages two or three times. Nobody called me back. I finally got hold of Mr. White. I was, of course, by then very upset. He was very dismissive, very condescending. Granted, he wasn't yelling and screaming at me. I was the one yelling. But he was very condescending and very dismissive, which made me even more upset. And since then, they did refund half of my towing fee. However, I don't know why I have to pay $90 to park there for 10 minutes while I'm supposed to be having a meeting with one of the tenants. I went to every single one of the tenants for Uptown Shopping Center. They said that they've been having this problem for a long time. They were very upset. And, in fact, there's one tenant, Faces Unlimited. They do facials and hair. One lady was in there, and you know how that takes longer sometimes than you expect. By the time she came out, her car was gone because she exceeded the time limit that you're supposed to park there. Ace Hardware, who is also a tenant there, told me that they've had people come in and said they will never shop there again because of the parking towing situation. By the time I got my car and went back to the shopping center, they had the tow truck there towing three or four other cars. I mean, 15 minutes. Now, this gentleman saw me leave my car and walk out of the lot. If it wasn't predatory, this gentleman could have come up to me and said, excuse me, ma'am, you're not supposed to park here. If you're going somewhere else, please move your car. He was standing right there. That's, you know, that's what I'm talking about, being predatory. And so I'm really glad that, you know, Senator Gordley had brought up this issue and addressed, because I really think that there are a lot of people who cannot afford to pay that. And I personally think it's criminal, especially when they've made an error like that, not to make amends and take care of the situation. Thank you.
Chair Przanski, Senator Gordley, committee members. For the record, my name is Sabina Shaughnessy. That's S-A-B-I-N-A. Last name is Shaughnessy, S-H-A-U-G-H-N-E-S-S-Y. On the morning of September 18th, just past September, at 7:30 in the morning, I was out of town. My car was in the care of a friend. My car was towed from the South Park blocks in downtown Portland. Since I was out of town, my friend was not able to find out what had actually happened to my car until later on someone who had seen the car be towed that morning had to tell them that they'd seen the car towed. He was not able to find out from any of the towing companies that he had called or from the city parking department to know where it was towed to or why it was towed, because he was not the owner. So when I returned a few days later, I had to do some research and dig and find out that Retriever Towing had towed my car under the thought that my car was one with several parking tickets. And even though my car did have three parking tickets, they believed that it was the same car as that had, I think they said, about 17 other parking tickets. So they assumed that my car was another car on their record that they were apparently keeping. The car was towed on a Monday morning, and since I didn't return to Portland with another car to go pick up my vehicle, or knowing where it was exactly at first, I had to rent a car first, which, being under 25, there's an extra fee for that. I had to still make it back and forth to work, and where I live, the buses don't run very regularly, so I had to rent a car in order to get back and forth to work, especially since I didn't have the money to take the car out of tow at the time. By the time I was able to go pick up my car, on that morning I called them, and they told me how much they had been charging me per day, which they said was $45 a day to store it. And they also said that I had a deadline of 5 days after they towed my car to pick it up, because otherwise they were going to sell it in auction. And they said that if I didn't pick it up by that Monday, it would be sold to auction. So I had to take the day off of work after returning the rental car. I took an hour and 45-minute bus ride to far north Portland to go pick up my car. When I finally found the lot that wasn't clearly marked, so I had to basically walk around an unknown neighborhood to find the place. I reached the towing company, and when I looked at the charges, they charged me twice for gas for their vehicles and twice for mileage, because it just so happened that morning, instead of keeping it where they had told me they originally had it, which was maybe 2 miles away from where I lived, just that morning, they happened to tow it farther out. So they had to charge me twice for that. Then, after a half an hour of them looking for my vehicle on the lot, they couldn't find it. They assumed that someone had possibly stolen it off their lot. So I offered to go out into their own lot, look for my car, which they had no record of where they had placed it. They had no record of what it had looked like at all. And I was able to find my car. I didn't recognize it at first, though, because it was so covered with dirt and rocks that I just couldn't recognize it at all. And it was painted on the windshield. They had painted a price and a lot number so that they could take it to the auction. So after I was able to identify my car, I had to go pay the fines, which including the time off of work and everything else, came up to be just over $700 for a few days of tow. I took my car back, and with limited visibility, because they wouldn't take the paint off of my windshield itself, I had to wait till I got home, and it took me about a week to actually take all of the paint off of it. Sorry, I'm a little nervous.
You're doing fine.
So altogether it was just over $700. My gas tank was empty, which when it was parked, it was full. And in the end, about a month ago, I received a letter with a check saying that they had found out that I was right, that I didn't have all of those parking tickets. The apology just came in the form of a check, which actually didn't even cover all of the parking tickets they said that I didn't have. They only paid for, I think, two of the parking tickets, and it still wasn't enough to fully recover. The amount of money that I had to pay actually did take away from my tuition that I had to pay that term. And, yeah, so that's just a few of the repercussions of that I've had to take on from there towing my car.
Thank you. Questions for the panel?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I've got a few, so go right ahead.
I first of all, I just want to thank the witnesses for coming forward and sharing your complaints, sharing your stories. And I also want to acknowledge that Sabina Shaughnessy is a Portland State University student. She is an intern in my office, and as she became aware that we were working on this this issue, her story surfaced. Mm. And you've done a great job this afternoon, both of you, sharing. That's what this public process is all about, people coming forward and putting their thoughts and concerns on record so that we can then make informed, good public policy decisions. Thank you both.
I do have a couple of questions. I hope I say this right. Ms. Shaughnessy?
Shaughnessy.
Shaughnessy. The parking tickets, I'm sorry, I heard the testimony, but I didn't pick up as to if that was, quote-unquote, parking tickets from a private entity, or are these allegedly parking tickets that you were supposed to receive from the City of Portland?
The Retriever Towing told me that it was a mixture of both, apparently, that I had parking tickets from a private parking lot, which they couldn't identify, nor could they show me proof of the tickets. And I do have proof of the parking tickets from the City of Portland, but they were not in the sum of enough to be towed.
All right. And if I can follow up on that question as to the location of your car, was it on a private property or was it on the city lot?
I believe it was on city lot. I was out of town at the time. And so when I asked the person that was taking care of my car, they said that they thought that it was public parking, but then Retriever Towing said that it was private.
Okay, but it was some type of parking lot. It wasn't on the street.
No, it was not on the street.
Okay. And then, Ms. Tan, I just want to ask you on the signs that you mentioned that were actually close to at the location.
Mm-hmm.
Did you recognize or notice if it said that some requirement that you had to be conducting business at that establishment, meaning somewhere in the commercial area of where you were parked, or anything to say that if you leave the lot or if you go somewhere else that your car is subject to towing?
There was a sign, if I remember correctly, it's been a while now, it was at the entrance, and the words were not very big. Now, I figure I was doing business on that lot because the tenant was there. Since then, they have put out a lot of signs. Now there are signs everywhere, which is good. So it's very confusing because one of the issues that Mr. White said was, well, if you wanted a cup of coffee, you could have walked across this Burnside. Across Burnside, there's a Starbucks, and now that is also Uptown Shopping Center. I didn't know that. Unless you live around there or frequent those businesses, you wouldn't know it's the same place. I just happened to go to the nearest place, you know, literally. And he said, let me tell you, if you were parking in my lot and you saw a friend walk by, and this is what he's saying, and you stepped off the lot to say hi, you're technically violating the rule, and we have a right to tow your car.
So, Ms. Tan, that's what I'm trying to find out, is if they actually are giving notice in their signage that says that if you leave the lot or leave the business and leave the car and walk across the street, whether you had noticed that would be, quote-unquote, a violation. Because the second question I have is that I'm just, you know, picturing if you were with that realtor and the realtor said, hey, why don't we go get a cup of coffee? We'll look at the paperwork. And mm-hmm. if you went to the same place that you went to get your cup of coffee, mm-hmm. whether you would have been technically off the property and they would have been able to tow your car.
Technically, yes. And no, what they had said was you can park here. I think it's a 1 hour parking. I don't remember. You can park here while conducting business at these places. And they were not very big. And it's strange because there's a store across the street, Smith & Hawken, across the street, has parking access to that lot. But Cost Plus, which is behind Smith & Hawken, does not. Now, how would anyone know? How would anyone know unless you stand there and read? But most people would just assume, hey, it is. And I was conducting business at the property. I was early. Now, if I was parking there and then walked off and went shopping on Northwest 23rd, then I wouldn't like my car being towed, but I would certainly understand that they were doing the job that they had to do. But in my case, I really never thought they would not take care of the issue.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. As Senator Gordley says, it's very important for people to come forward. We're glad that you did. Mr. Cole, I see that you're still here. I had one question, if you'd be so kind to come back, based on what I just heard in the testimony. I'm just wondering if you could clarify for us regarding whatever agreement you have with the City of Portland, if you have one, regarding towing off of a public parking lot based on someone having city parking tickets. I've never heard of that. If there's any type of contract that's been entered by a municipality with a private entity to enforce their ticket regulation or tickets that are issued through impounds.
I am not aware of that either, and I suspect that it was a private lot. And are you talking about Ms. O'Shaughnessy?
Yes.
I'm going to guess that it was a private lot. In each of the private lot, the city has an ordinance called the pay-to-park ordinance. And when you're supposed to pay for parking at lots and you don't pay, then there are a couple of different companies that issue parking citations, kind of like if you don't pay at a parking meter here on the street. And when they aren't paid in 5 days, then a letter goes out, a letter at 5 days, a letter at 30 days, and a letter at 60 days. And then at, I believe it's the 90-day point, a letter goes out, after there's three unpaid citations, this is all lined out in the city ordinance, a letter goes out, a certified letter, that says your car is on a tow list. And then if any of those auditors find that car on the tow list, obviously somebody hasn't paid, and so then they order a tow. And they're authorized to do that through the city ordinance.
So the city ordinance, it sounds to me, Mr. Cole, would actually allow you, if someone is on that tow list, and if someone saw that car parked either on a private lot, a public lot, or a public street?
No, only on a private lot.
Only on a private lot.
Yes.
Okay. So in the sense of, let's say, if someone's parked in their own residence, that ordinance would not allow you to remove that car from that residence.
That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions?
One more question while Mr. Cole is here, and thank you again. California and Washington have statutes that make patrol tolling illegal. Were you aware of that? Are you familiar with the California and Washington
and
statutes?
I'm not aware of Washington. I am aware of the very recently passed California statute, much debated statute, that did restrict patrol towing, but I do not know the circumstances around it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, Senator.
If you don't mind just tracking the money for me and the situation where a private ticket has been given and then they end up on the tow list.
Yes.
After you tow the vehicle and the person pays you, do you keep the money or do you share some of that money with any other entity?
In the case of the parking auditor company, when we collect their dollars for their fees that haven't been paid, in other words, the unpaid parking tickets, we give them that full amount.
Of only on the parking ticket, not the towing.
That's right. They
fee.
Do not. They do
you
not
keep
share
the towing fee.
Revenue. No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Appreciate you coming back up. Ms. Novick, I understand you may have some information as to the number of tows that DOJ has received?
Complaints,
excuse me. Towing complaints, yes.
Chair Przanski, this is Eva Novick again. I did receive limited information from my office, so I can certainly follow up with the committee
okay.
if you have further questions. There were 55 complaints that our office received in the year 2006, and when consumers call our office, we do tell them that we currently do not have jurisdiction over these types of complaints, and therefore we advise that they do not file a complaint with our office because there's not a lot that we can do at this point. So the numbers that we have are from either mailed complaints through the postal mail or emailed complaints.
Okay.
Follow up. Thank you. Is it the number of complaints that have been received by the Department of Justice that have led to the creation of the work group? I'm trying to determine where this issue rises in terms of what level does it rise to in terms of importance.
Sure. Chair Pruszynski and Senator Gordley, we do look at the complaints that we receive, and we read them so that, you know, not every complaint sometimes rises, say, to the same occasion as others. So we do try to look at the nature of the complaints as well as the number of the complaints. And, yes, when we did receive written complaints, it did become a concern of the department, and that is why both last session and this session we propose legislation that would try to deal with some of these issues.
Thank you.
And if there's nothing further, I just want to make the announcements I made at the beginning of the meeting for committee members as well as for the general public. We will not be having a meeting this next Monday, February 5th. We will not be committee members doing a travel meeting on February 9th. So our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, February 7th. With that, we're adjourned, and thank you very much for everyone that's in attendance and your willingness to listen.